Hey everyone, and welcome to this Risky Business feature package. My name's Patrick Gray. Regular listeners would know by now that I'm doing fewer features these days, but I'm trying to go a little bit longer and a little bit more in depth when I do it. And that means we can run longer news segments in the weekly show and not just run features because we're welded to a particular format. But this week's Risky Business content, I should also mention, is sponsored by Remediant. They make a just-in-time privileged access management tool. You can check them out at remediant.com, and you can also hear their sponsor interview in this week's weekly news show that was published the other day. In this feature, we're going to be talking to two people, and the topic is, for the most part, the introduction of pointer authentication on the latest Apple iPhones. This is a development that basically flew under the radar of most of the InfoSec media, and it's significant because it's basically going to wipe out ROP exploits as we know them, at least. Not completely, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect mitigation, but Apple has leveraged some recent ARM features to really lock down their devices. Now, in addition to the pointer authentication stuff, they've also made some changes that will affect the ability of companies like Cellbrite to unlock phones. Now, again, this won't kill unlocks completely, but in one release, Apple has really made life a lot harder for people in the offense game, and I think that's pretty significant. And I also think this will have some consequences for the crypto debate eventually. These devices are just getting more and more secure through some really, you know, top-notch engineering. So we'll be talking to Chris Wade about this. He is the brain behind Corellium, which is an iOS emulator, I guess you'd call it. He virtualizes iOS, and it works really well, right? His clients include everyone from exploit developers to the publishers of very popular iOS applications. If you want to backtest an app change on 15 different versions of iOS, Corellium is the way to do that. Or if you want to test your exploits as well. Then we're going to hear from Dr. Silvio Cesare of InfoSec here in Oz. He does training and consulting these days. And he's going to talk about whether we might see similar mitigations on Intel, and he's going to weigh in also on Apple's changes. But yeah, let's start with Chris Wade now of Corellium, weighing in on Apple's most recent features.
It's most definitely going to make exploiting overflows and use after freeze a lot harder. What you're going to see is probably an increase in the value of bugs in general. And they're going to be more data only kind of and maybe logic bugs that will be used moving forward. You might see some attacks on the secure pointers itself, but I think most of what you're going to see is exploits using web-based like JIT, where they're able to modify executable pages in memory, or privilege escalation through data-only attacks, like being able to modify some data in memory that gives you escalated privileges without actually executing a ROP chain or having to exchange a secure pointers. It will be very, very tricky to exploit this head-on. The way that Apple has implemented it is actually, as far as we've seen so far in the last few days, is spot on. And it will significantly change the landscape of security for iOS, specifically exploit development.
Are you also surprised at how little attention this has got?
No, I think that a lot of stuff gets little attention when it comes to security. I mean, things that directly impact the consumers get more attention, but the kind of underlying black box, like SEP is a great example. Authenticated pointers wasn't the only change that they made in this update. And this update to the devices this new device they're releasing is actually the most significant hardware update they've done since the 5S. But you don't really see anyone covering about why is that the case. They've changed out pretty much all of their offloading processes from 32-bit to 64-bit. They've introduced DARTs, which are essentially page tables, device address remap tables in front of SEP. And they've gone to a lot of trouble to try and stamp out the gray key / unlock that some of these Israeli companies are offering. So I think that, yeah, the secure pointers has been maybe not covered as much as you would have hoped in the press, but overall, there's a lot of changes in these devices compared to the previous ones. And I don't think it's really gotten any coverage besides, oh, wait, it's faster.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Everyone's busy with those sort of headlines. But look, why don't we just explain to the listeners what, you know, an authenticated pointer actually is? Because there might be a few people out there scratching their heads going, what is an authenticated pointer?
Well, it's actually quite simple. It's essentially with 64 bits, they don't use the complete space for the address. So they have a bunch of bits spare. And what they do is they create this cryptographic tag, which is a combination of a randomly generated key, the context, which represents, let's say, if it's a V table pointer versus a function pointer, and a pointer itself. And they combine these three using like an HMAC algorithm, and they put this in the, or they authenticate this on the entry and exit of the function. And if they, example is Apple uses this on a branch and link instruction. It puts the value in the link register when it hits the instruction. And then the pack IBSP instruction takes the value from the link register and signs it and then puts it onto the stack. That way it's already authenticated if it then branches to another instruction. And then when it leaves that function using a ret A or a ret B, depending on the key, it authenticates that function. So why does this matter? Well, if you're doing a use after free or a overflow exploit, the way that you achieve execution is through something called ROP, return oriented programming. So now the case is you can't use just any gadget from anywhere in memory. You're restricted to secure authenticated pointers, right? So that's where the context matters. Let's say that you're in one function and you're able to leak some secure pointers and the context matches, you could essentially replace another authenticated pointer with one you've leaked, but you're going to execute that whole function.
You lose a lot of flexibility, right?
Yeah. It creates a different kind of ROP in the sense where you're not just chaining instructions together, you're changing functions together. And it makes the overall bug kind of collection that you would need to create a full exploit chain to be able to, let's say, go from the web browser, from the sandbox to the to root to the kernel, just 10 times or 100 times harder than it was before. And it wipes out pretty much the last 5 years of bugs that all these companies have been working on and creating these exploit chains and governments.
Well, that's right. I mean, effectively for new devices, Apple has just squashed everyone's back catalog of ROP exploits, right?
Yes. There is some exploits, like I said before, data only and logic kind of bugs.
Yeah. Mem corruption has been the focus for quite a while, right? But logic bugs are the ones that are going to be the last ones standing. That's pretty clear.
Yeah. But logic bugs are tricky because you essentially define logic bugs, you have to understand all the code, right? Better than, I guess, the programmer who wrote the code. So they're a lot trickier to find, and they don't normally yield as much as overflow or use after free did previously. Hmm. Keep in mind, though, that they didn't really wipe out those chains. Those chains still work on devices that aren't the XS or 10S.
What I'm saying is if you get one of these new devices, like those prior ROP exploits just won't work on them.
Yeah, that's true.
And they can't be rewritten or reconstructed in the same way. I mean, I'm sure maybe someone will figure it out, but that's got to be like an order of magnitude more complex and maybe not even achievable.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very difficult. The one exception is going to be when you're dealing with JIT, where like a browser where it's able to mark memory, read, write, execute, and you're able to override pages of memory. So if you can essentially overwrite the authenticated pointer instructions, then you're up against KTRR, right? So the device has physical hardware that is going to stop you from changing kernel memory, which is problematic as well. So I think that overall, there will be very, very few successful exploit chains out there for iOS moving forward on these devices.
That's an amazing thing to be able to say, isn't it, really?
Well, I guess it depends on what business you're in. But I mean, if you look at people like Cordiop Luca, who's already claimed that he's managed to bypass it, I think it's a challenge for a lot of people. And I'm sure there's companies out there like Cellebrite is probably sweating a lot right now. They're well known to have iBoot bugs that allow them and SEP execution bugs. So you've got to wonder if now they're not going to be able to unlock devices anymore. The same with GrayKey. And Apple also introduced the DFU mode password seed locks too. So now they won't be able to access any user data from DFU mode. I obviously don't know exactly how their iBoot and set bugs work, but I think this will make it a lot harder for them. Plus the fact that they've introduced more darts, the address remap tables for front of SEP, which makes it super hard to access from both SEP side and from the main CPU side. I mean, Apple definitely is so far ahead of the game on security that it's kind of scary. If you think that today's existing ARM hardware is like 8.0 based and they're on 8.3. So it's been a significant challenge for us trying to virtualize that as well.
Yeah, I can imagine that you've had a few difficult days with that.
Yeah, the last week has been very interesting. I mean, we definitely learn a lot, and Apple makes mistakes just like everybody else. So I definitely think there will be. I mean, that's one bad thing about hardware, right? Is if you create these mitigations in hardware, and there's, you know, a hole in it, then you're stuck. It's locked into your hardware. So, and we've seen bugs like that with KTRR and others where Apple can't fix them because, you know, it's done in hardware. So
can you just explain to us what KTRR is? Because you've mentioned it twice now, and I've got to confess, I don't.
So essentially, it stops modifications to the kernel in memory without going into too much detail. But It just physically locks some registers to stop any kernel execution from modifying the executable pages in memory. So they've really kicked it up a notch since the X for the new devices. And we're still exploring a lot of how they've implemented things on these new devices, given that, you know, we've only had a few days to look at them. So I think over the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of interesting kind of tidbits come out about the new devices. A lot of people right now are wishing they had access to the hardware. So I think when it comes out, it'll be really interesting to see all these people who do have exploit chains try them out to see where they come, because I'm sure we'll hear about it if they're able to successfully. I mean, we saw that Cordiop already posted that he was able to. He said he doesn't actually have a device, so he's theoretical, but come Friday, I'm going to try it out.
But I mean, will these be most likely one-shot techniques that'll sort of get cleaned up later, or are we talking people are going to wind up claiming generic bypasses? Because it doesn't feel like there can be a generic bypass to this sort of thing.
I don't know how it's going to go. I think that if anyone actually finds a bypass, I think in Luca's case, he's done it through JIT, which is kind of like one of the pitfalls of the secure pointers. But I think that anyone comes up with a bypass for this, not using JIT, they might want to keep it to themselves because it would be worth a lot of money to a lot of people.
So, I mean, look, would you say it's fair to characterize this as a fairly massive leap forward in terms of, you know, platform security as far as iOS goes? Because that's what it feels like to me, like a significant, substantial step forward.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think it's a fairly giant leap. I think anyone who says it's not, they can come and show us their exploit chain.
Exploits or it didn't happen. Yeah, and I guess, you know, I mean, this really does sort of cement that concept of iOS as being the most secure consumer-grade operating system, doesn't it? I mean, that's just, we can just say that's true now, no doubt.
I mean, yeah, I typically don't like to say that because I feel like Apple then starts patting themselves on the back. But yeah, I would agree with that. I think a lot of it will depend on once we have the physical devices and we have more time to pull this apart and play with it on their complete implementation of PAC, what algorithm they've used and how the contexts work in more more degree, like is it with, let's say, vtables, is it the class hierarchy? Can you substitute secure pointers from other classes, or is it only from the hierarchy? Things like that. Like, I imagine that they probably did a pretty good job on their implementation of this, but until we kind of spend a little bit more time and actually have the physical devices to test, it's kind of got to be up in the air, because it only takes, you know, one small little bug in the hardware. They didn't implement something right, and then these devices are awash, right?
So if, you reckon that could be the biggest risk to this as a mitigation is an actual hardware level snafu?
Oh, I think that's the biggest risk to anything. Is it? But no, I mean, there's definitely known pitfalls. So I'm sure Apple knows where the weak spots in this are. From a virtualization point of view, you know, we're always looking for hardware-based bugs. And because we're obviously reverse engineering the hardware and implementing it as a model. So yeah, it would be devastating. And if you look at Apple's history, they've had a couple of hardware bugs before, but this would be a glaring hole in their device. So I think it's unlikely, but it's something we'll be definitely interested to look for when the devices arrive.
Now, of course, Apple has released a fairly giant PDF all about the security features of iOS 12. Obviously, you know, we've spent this interview focused on the authenticated pointers, but what else is in there that you think, is worth mentioning?
I mean, there's a lot in there. From the perspective that we care about at Corellium in terms of virtualization, the fact that they added darts in front of SEP, AOP, the fact that they all the 32-bit processors essentially for offloading were changed out to 64-bit processors, those things make massive differences to us. And I think in terms of exploiting SEP, the dart makes it a lot trickier, having this page table essentially in front of SEP. It's kind of like just another brick in the wall, right? Like they keep building this wall higher and higher for SEP. And there's probably, we know that Cellebrite has SEP execution, but there's probably maybe one or two other companies or individuals out there that have or had SEP execution, if that. So now with these additional enhancements, I'm going to think that there's really not too many people at all, maybe none, now that have the capability of unlocking a phone that has been locked, you know, like at a cold boot. So yeah, I mean, that's Apple's goal, right? Is privacy, the ability to, you're in a room full of people and you drop your phone and no matter what they do, they cannot unlock that device. I think they're there.
So are you saying this will actually really interfere with Cellebrite's techniques as well?
Yeah, I definitely think that Cellebrite will have problems now. They're smart people. They have smart people there. So I'm sure that they'll come up with something. But I'm very curious to see if they're able to continue this full iBoot SEP execution exploit or chain that they have going on for the unlocks. GrayKey is another company out there that I mentioned that they're using more of a brute force attempt via SEP. I'm also curious to see if that's been, you know, shunned with this new device or these new devices from Apple. But
so it's bad news for everyone, right? So it's bad news for NSO Group, for Cellebrite, for, you know, for Grayshift. It's pretty much bad news all around for anyone looking to access those devices. Chris Wade, thank you very much for joining us on the show to walk through Apple's, you know, latest security enhancements for iOS 12. Thanks a lot.
No worries.
That was Chris Wade there. Big thanks to him for that. I also spoke to Silvio Cesare about the pointer authentication stuff and also what sort of other mitigations we can expect to see on different architectures in the future. He also gives us a more complete explanation of what a data-only exploit is. Here he is.
Look, I think against ROP, it's an excellent mitigation and pretty much kills what we traditionally know as ROP. And looking at what it is, will it kill exploitation completely in terms of memory corruption? I mean, I don't think it will kill it completely. I think that there are still weaknesses and vulnerabilities in this mitigation, but it will certainly raise the bar much, much higher. If you look at sort of the trend of where we're going now with exploitation, that every vendor is really looking for some sort of control flow integrity. We have that in, you know, whether it's in software support, you know, for example, in Windows, or we see it in hardware support, which we do now in, you know, in ARM and implemented on iOS. And then Intel has its own technology as well, which is control flow enforcement technology, which hasn't been released yet publicly, but they're working quite hard towards that.
So that's interesting. And that's really why I wanted to speak to you as well, is I wanted to get a sense of, you know, what Intel's working on and how effective you feel it might be.
So Intel have the same sort of problem that ARM were facing, which is how do you kill ROP? How do you kill manipulation of control flow and control flow hijacking attacks, you know, in the presence of DEP and ASLR and things like that. So Intel have gone the idea of shadow stacks as an idea of protecting return addresses on the stack. And this is sort of an old idea. This has been around since pretty much my entire career, since stack canaries were first introduced and buffer overflows were the initial problem. The idea is to maintain a separate stack just to store return addresses and control flow information. And then you can't manipulate this shadow stack directly or easily, and only, you know, legitimate calls to functions can modify this shadow stack. And the shadow stack is verified against the legitimate stack at the end of a function to validate that, you know, this is the correct return address. There has been no manipulation of these return addresses on the stack. So that's Intel's implementation. Shadow stacks supported in hardware. And some changes to the instruction formats as well, and some additional instructions as well. Obviously, ARM have gone the other way and implemented authenticated pointers, which is sort of a really sort of interesting technology. And I hadn't really sort of seen this idea before, at least discussed, you know, in the times of discussing shadow stacks. But they're working very differently, but both have the same ultimate goal of identifying or mitigating against corruption, you know, memory corruption, and modifying the control flow.
Well, I guess it's hard too to know which one's going to be a better strategy, given that they're both kind of new, right? But I mean, on gut feel, what would you think is going to be the winner here?
Look, I think they're both going to end up pretty good, but I think they're both such interesting technologies that it would be nice to have both. I think if you look at authenticated pointers, they have multiple uses besides just protecting return addresses on the stack and control flow information. They can actually do things like, you know, effectively it's putting a stack canary on every pointer that you have to detect effectively corruption of a pointer. Whereas you look at control flow enforcement technology, it's really just protecting sort of, you know, the return addresses of, you know, involved in control flow, not as generic as a, you know, a general pointer that gets protected. I think they're both very interesting technologies, and they probably both have different types of weaknesses associated with them. For example, with authenticated pointers, the idea that you can substitute authenticated pointers with each other, you know, it doesn't really exist in this control flow enforcement technology, but certainly, you know, once the pointer has been authenticated and you have that effectively a digital signature, if you've got an existing one that you've got from somewhere else and it has the right context, you can just substitute these authenticated pointers with each other and maybe get the control flow to do something that, you know, get these pointers to do something that wasn't originally intended. I have actually seen some academic work on the idea of data-only attacks, where the control flow in the presence of something like control flow guard is consistent and stable, but the data is manipulated, passing between functions. And these functions operating on attacker-controlled data actually might end up doing something useful to an attacker.
You don't try to change the control flow. You just alter the data that's being passed from to the functions.
Exactly. Consider just a sort of a classic sort of function. If you have a function that calls, you know, system and then launches, you know, an arbitrary sort of user-supplied string to execute on the shell, if an attacker can simply supply, you know, bin sh to that function, then, you know, it's game
Happy
over.
Days,
now, what
right?
else
yeah.
can you manipulate? Yeah. So what else can you manipulate if there's any sort of code that launches an external, you know, program? Maybe that can be manipulated. You know, is it passing around an argument to a program? You know, can you do shell injection via data flow only attacks? Maybe you can't control the program that gets launched via the shell, but maybe you can inject by an attacker, you know, via memory corruption, you know, inject data into a program that that has code injection on a shell or something like that. These are just ideas that may be useful.
And well, look, I mean, no mitigation is perfect, right? But I guess what I'm wondering here is, you know, would you say that this could be accurately described as a bit of a game changer?
Absolutely. I think this really is going to mark the end of a generation of what we know as ROP, I think, really. I mean, it looks like it. It looks like we're getting to the end of classic control flow hijacking. And then we saw that, you know, we started to see that with things like, you know, control flow guard and with, you know, control flow integrity and things like this. So
they're software only things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So now we see in hardware that there is strong support to kill these types of exploits, which is really going to, you know, bring in hopefully a new era of exploitation, but it will certainly kill off
you evil SOB. Hopefully this is going to make exploit dev more fun.
Yeah, so it's hard to say where it will go, but it's certainly raised the bar significantly, and only time will tell to see what happens now, really. I do think it's conceivable that we will see, you know, the start of data-only exploits in some sort of broader sense, that besides just very specific, you know, a flag that says is administrator in the program and changing that to yes, you are the administrator. I hope we see that the start of sort of more generic data flow, data-only exploits that might do something useful to an attacker. Yeah, so this is, you know, probably going to raise the price of, you know, exploit chains and you know, 0 days again. To have working exploits against things, it's going to raise the price significantly.
All right, Dr. Silvio Cesare, thank you very much for joining us as part of this feature package. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Silvio Cesare there, and that is it for this feature package. Big thanks to everyone who participated. I'll be back on Monday with a Soapbox edition of the show, but until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.